Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to be tackling a case. It's a real head scratcher. It makes you think about all the things we just kind of take for granted when it comes to creative work, you know.
Absolutely. This is Community for Creative Nonviolence versus Reed, a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. It still has a big impact today, especially for people who, well, make a living from their art, from their creative work.
You sent me a whole bunch of legal documents about this, and I got to admit, I was pretty lost at first. It all goes back to 1985, right? Christmas time, Washington, D.C. We've got this nonprofit organization called CCNV. They're trying to make a statement about homelessness.
Yeah, their leader, Mitch Snyder, he had this vision for a nativity scene. It would be part of the annual Pageant of Peace, but he wanted something different, not the traditional figure.
Something a little less traditional holiday-ish.
Right. He wanted to show the reality for a lot of people in the city right then and there.
And that's where the sculpture Third World America comes in. A homeless black family huddled on a steam grate.
Yeah, not exactly your typical cheerful Christmas image.
Yeah. To create the sculpture, they brought in James Earl Reed, a sculptor.
No, things were a little more informal back then, right?
I mean, yeah.
No contracts, no real in-depth discussions about copyright.
Exactly. They agreed on a quick turnaround time. You know, the budget wasn't huge. And they decided to use a synthetic material that would kind of look like bronze.
So far, so good.
For a while. Reed makes the sculpture. They put it on display. Everybody seems happy for a while.
But then?
Then CCNV gets this idea. They want to take the sculpture on tour, you know, spread their message even further.
That makes sense.
And that's where the trouble begins.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Reed starts pointing out that the material isn't strong enough for a long tour. It's going to get damaged. He tells them they should cast it in bronze.
Yeah.
You know, to make it more durable.
So, like a more permanent solution.
Right, exactly. But CCNV says they just don't have the money for that. Uh-oh. I sense some tension brewing here.
Yeah. Things start getting a little tense.
And then what? What happens?
Well, both Reed and CCNV, they both go and file for copyright.
No. Are you serious?
Yeah, both of them claiming to be the sole author of Third World America.
Talk about a holiday season gone wrong.
Yeah.
So, now this case... it ends up going to the Supreme Court, right?
Right. And they're faced with this fundamental question. Was Reed an employee of CCNV when he created the sculpture?
If he was, I'm guessing that would make it a work for hire, right?
Exactly. Which would mean that CCNV would own the copyright.
Okay. So how do they decide that?
Well, to figure it out, they had to really dig into the 1976 Copyright Act.
And from what I saw in those documents, that can be a bit of a legal jungle.
Yeah, there's a whole debate about what exactly makes someone an employee when we're talking about art, about creative work.
I can imagine. It seems pretty tricky.
The act itself doesn't give us a clear definition. The court looked at different interpretations, you know? Like, did CCNV control every little detail of the final product?
Right.
Did they, like, stand over Reed's shoulder the whole time and supervise him directly?
Interesting.
Ultimately, they decided to use this thing called common law agency principles to try and figure it out.
Okay. So, I'm not a lawyer. I need some help here.
Mm-hmm.
What are common law agency principles?
Hmm.
And why do they matter in this case?
It's a good question, and it matters a lot for you, too. I mean, think about your own work as a narrator for the LexiPlug podcast, right?
Yeah, okay. I see where you're going with this.
Basically, these principles try to get at who really has the power in a relationship, who's calling the shots.
I see. So, like, with LexiPlug, if they told me exactly what to say, every word, and set my schedule down to the minute and gave me all the equipment, that would be more of an employer-employee relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
Gotcha. But with Reed and CCNV, it wasn't quite that simple, was it?
Not at all. The court had this whole list of factors they considered. Was Reed considered a skilled laborer? Did he use his own tools, his own studio? How long did the project last? Did he set his own hours? They looked really closely at the way they worked together.
So it's not just about the final product, but about the whole process, the back and forth between them.
Exactly. And after looking at all of this, the Supreme Court decided that Reed wasn't really an employee in the traditional sense.
He was more like
an independent contractor.
Okay.
He had a lot of autonomy. He used his own tools, his own studio. He pretty much set his own schedule. The whole arrangement, it just didn't look like a typical employer-employee setup.
And this is where things get really interesting for our listeners, don't they? I mean, so many people these days are working in the gig economy, freelancing.
Hmm?
And those lines can get really blurry.
Exactly. And this case set a big precedent. Even though it happened way before podcasting and all the online content creation we see now, the basic issues are still relevant.
So the court decided Reed wasn't an employee. What did that mean for Third World America and the whole copyright issue?
Well, because he wasn't an employee, the sculpture couldn't be classified as a work for hire under Section 101 of the Copyright Act.
Hold on a second. Legal jargon alert. What does Section 101 say, and how does it apply here? I mean, think about me and my work with LexPlug. How would this affect me?
It's simpler than it sounds, really. Section 101 is the part of the law that says what a work for hire is. It lays out the situations where the person or the company that commissions a work automatically gets the copyright.
So they own the copyright even though someone else created it, just because they paid for it.
Right, but there are conditions, specific conditions that have to be met. In this case, sculpture wasn't one of the types of work specifically listed in Section 101 too. That section covers things like contributions to a collection of works, or things like motion pictures, translations, stuff like that.
So it has to be a specific type of work.
Yeah, and in Reed's case, there was no written contract saying that CC&V owned the copyright.
Okay, so even though they came up with the idea and paid for the sculpture, because there was no contract, and because of how Reed worked, they weren't automatically the copyright owners.
Exactly. And this is a crucial point for you and anyone else doing creative work. Having clear contracts, especially when it comes to who owns the copyright, is super important. It's way better to have those conversations up front than to end up in court later on, you know?
Absolutely. Makes total sense. I guess I always thought copyright was pretty simple, but wow, there are a lot of details.
Yeah, it's more complex than it looks at first glance, especially now with the internet and everything.
It's a whole different world, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've established that CC&V wasn't automatically the copyright holder. But wait, it doesn't end there, does it? There's more to this whole authorship question, right?
You're right. The Supreme Court, they left another possibility open, joint authorship. Even though Reed wasn't an employee, CC&V could still maybe claim they were a joint author of Third World America.
Hold on, joint authorship? How does that even work? They didn't actually create the sculpture.
That's where things get really interesting.
So before we got sidetracked there, we were talking about how the Supreme Court decided that James Earl Reed, the sculptor, he wasn't an employee of CC&V when he made Third World America.
Right.
Which meant they didn't automatically own the copyright just because they commissioned it.
Exactly. And as we were just saying, the court did leave open the possibility that CC&V could be considered a joint author, even though they didn't actually physically sculpt the piece.
I gotta admit, this whole joint authorship thing is kind of confusing to me.
Hmm.
It seems counterintuitive. How can you be an author of something you didn't actually create?
Uh-oh.
Like, with my own work as a narrator for LexPlug, how would that apply?
That's a great question, and it comes up all the time, especially with these creative projects where people are working together. The idea behind joint authorship is that sometimes you have multiple people contributing to a work in a way that you just can't separate their contributions. They're intertwined. It all becomes one thing, legally speaking.
So it's like different ingredients in a dish. Once they're mixed together,
yeah,
you can't really separate the flavors.
Perfect analogy. So with Third World America, CC&V came up with the original concept, right? They gave Reed sketches, they gave him specific details on how they wanted this homeless family to look, and they were giving input throughout the whole process.
So even though Reed was the one who physically made the sculpture, their ideas and their direction, that was enough to maybe make them a joint author. So are you saying, like, even though I'm the one speaking the words for LexPlug, if they're giving me a lot of instructions on how to say things, you know, like the tone and the pacing, and if they suggest edits, that they could potentially claim to be a joint author of the narration?
It's possible, yeah. The key thing is whether those contributions are considered essential to the final product, and also if there was this shared intention to create something together, a joint work, it gets a little tricky. Because in your situation with LexPlug, obviously they're going to give you some direction and feedback, right? That's part of the job.
Of course. I mean, they're the ones who hired me, so they have a vision for how they want it to sound. But where's the line? When does giving feedback become co-authoring? That seems like a really blurry line to me.
Absolutely. It can be. And that's why clear communication and written agreements are so important. Ideally, you and LexPlug would have a contract that lays it all out, you know? Who owns the copyright, what each of you can do with the narration, all that.
So even for a podcast where things might feel more casual, you really need to have those legal things in place.
Absolutely. It can prevent so many problems down the road. Like, let's say Lexplug wants to use your narration for a promo video, but they don't give you credit or any extra money. If you have a contract that clearly states you own the copyright, then you're in a much better position to negotiate, right?
Okay, wow. This is making me rethink my own contracts. I thought copyright was pretty straightforward, but it seems like there are so many little details, especially now that so much is digital and people collaborate online all the time.
You're absolutely right. It's more complicated than it seems at first. And this case from 1985, Community for Creative Nonviolence versus Reed, it's still influencing how we think about copyright even today.
Wow, so a case about a sculpture from like decades ago is relevant to podcasting and online stuff today. That's crazy.
Yeah, it really gets at the core of who creates something and who owns it. That's something that goes beyond just one type of art, you know?
It really makes you think, and it's kind of mind-blowing that something from so long ago can still have such a big impact.
And it shows how important legal precedent is. The basic ideas from this case, they're still being used and adapted to new situations, even though things have changed so much since 1985. I mean, think about all the ways people are creating and sharing online.
It's true. YouTube, podcasts, social media, online courses.
Right. It's a whole new world out there.
And with that new world comes a whole new set of legal questions, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do these old copyright laws work with things like remixes and mashups and projects where people are working together online from all over the place? It seems like it just gets more and more complicated.
You're right, it's a big challenge. The digital age has really forced us to rethink how we understand authorship and who owns what, you know?
So what happens when we try to apply the principles of Community for Creative Nonviolence v. Reed to, to online stuff?
That's when things get really interesting, and maybe that's something for another deep dive. But for now, let's wrap up this case, this Community for Creative Nonviolence v. Reed case. What are the key takeaways for people who are making creative work, or even just hiring someone to make it for them?
Yeah, let's do that. What have we learned? And what does it all mean for our listeners? Especially people working online, doing freelance and creative stuff.
The main takeaway is this: clear communication, well-defined contracts. That's essential. It doesn't matter if you're a sculptor, a writer, a podcaster, a YouTuber. Make sure you have a written agreement that says who owns the copyright, how it can be used, all those details. Don't rely on assumptions or handshake deals, especially when money and creative control are at stake.
So we spent all this time talking about Community for Creative Nonviolence versus Reed, this case about art, ownership, and the law.
Yeah, and it turns out, even though it was about a sculpture from way back in 1985, the ideas from it, they're still super relevant.
Especially now with so many people making a living in the gig economy, creating stuff online.
Right.
It's really made me think about how important this is, even for someone like me who mostly just uses their voice, you know?
Yeah.
Before this, I hadn't really thought much about the legal stuff. But now I'm seeing copyright in a whole new light.
That's what's great about these deep dives, right?
Yeah.
They make you think about things you might never have considered otherwise.
Totally. And you're saying earlier that this case, it really gets interesting when we try to apply it to all the stuff happening online now.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. What are some of the challenges that come up when we try to take these old copyright laws and make them work for the internet?
Well, one of the biggest challenges is that online content, it's often so collaborative and things change so quickly. Think about a YouTube video, for example.
Okay, yeah.
You might have one person filming, someone else editing, then another person doing the graphics or animations, and then music from all over the place, maybe even voiceover work from someone else entirely. And all of this is happening like at the same time, but not really. People all over the world contributing.
It's a far cry from like one artist working alone in their studio.
Exactly. So it's hard to say who really owns the copyright to that final video. Is it the
Yeah.
person who uploaded it? Is it everyone who worked on it? And then how do you even find all those people if you want to use that video or change it somehow?
It sounds like a total mess. And it's probably just getting more complicated as technology keeps changing.
It is. And then there's this whole other thing too, remix culture.
Right. Everyone's remixing stuff online.
Yeah. People are always taking existing content and changing it,
Mashups.
adding their own commentary, using it in ways the original creator never even thought of.
That's one of the coolest things about online content.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see how that creates problems for copyright.
Because copyright law, it's all about protecting the original creator, but when everyone's remixing, it's hard to say where one thing ends and another begins.
So how do we deal with all of this? Do we need completely new rules for the digital age? Or can we still use the principles from Community for creative nonviolence versus Reed?
That's the big question, isn't it? And there's no easy answer. Some people say that traditional copyright law is just too old-fashioned for the internet. They say we need something more flexible that recognizes how collaborative and transformative things are online.
I can see that. But wouldn't that make it harder to protect creators?
That's the challenge, right? You want to encourage creativity, which often happens best when people are collaborating and remixing. But you also want to make sure creators get paid fairly.
And that their work is respected, right?
Right. So how do we balance those things?
So where do we go from here? Is there any way to find a solution that works for everybody?
Well, I think the key is to keep talking about it, bringing together lawyers, creators, and the tech platforms, discussing these challenges, figuring out solutions.
Makes sense.
And being open to changing the legal rules as things evolve.
So it's a lot of work.
It is, but it's important work.
Yeah. It's exciting to think about, though, you know?
Yeah.
We're living in this time where so much creative stuff is possible.
Totally.
And it's up to us to figure out the rules of the game, so to speak.
Exactly. Rules that support creativity and also make sure everyone's treated fairly.
This has been such a fascinating deep dive. Who knew we'd start with a sculpture about homelessness and end up talking about the future of copyright online?
Yeah. And it really shows how interconnected these things are, you know? It's important to think about the big picture, the legal side of things, and how it all affects us.
Well said. I'm never going to look at copyright the same way again.
Me neither.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Community for Creative Nonviolence versus Reed, a case that gives us a glimpse into history, but also makes us think about what's next for creativity in the digital age.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners out there, remember, whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, understanding copyright, even just the basics, can really help you protect your work, collaborate effectively, and navigate the world of online creation with confidence.
Great advice. And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for listening.